for the Christian, for the worshiping Christian, the page turns to the Christmas story some 700 years before any baby is ever born into a barn. It begins with a line from a poem from the 9th chapter of Isaiah's prophecy. If you read Isaiah's chapter 1 through 8, and we should say that Christian people read Isaiah differently than our Jewish brothers and sisters, worshiping Christian people read Isaiah as a foreshadowing of the birth of Jesus. And in those first 8 chapters that we have of Isaiah's prophecy, if you were to read them this evening, I think that you would find the words, if you were able to detach yourself from any preconceived notion that you have about prophecy, particularly about a prophetic word that only speaks to one particular moment in time, rather than describing the condition of humanity. But if you were to read chapters 1 through 8 of Isaiah, you would hear things that are both religiously and sociologically familiar. If you were able to do it with a clear mind and an open heart and a blank slate, you would hear the story of a particular people, a group of humanity who finds themselves struggling. If you are a history major, like I am a history major, then of course it comes as no surprise that humanity's development across the ages is not a flat line. Rather, as human beings, not individuals, but as groups of human beings, we experience the mountaintop and we experience the bottom of the valley, and we experience everything in between those 2 points in time. And I think most of us would probably agree, those of us in the room tonight who've been living out their lives over the course of the last 15 or 20 years, that we, right now, in our moment in time, in our social and religious culture, we are not on the mountaintop. We're struggling, right? We do. Humanity struggles from time to time, and Isaiah speaks particular words to the reality of Israel's struggle, and his prophecy speaks those same words into our lives even this very evening. And if we can surrender our earnest and severe religious positions and just listen to his words openly, we hear these words that are both descriptive, a tiny bit comedic, with these interludes of hope. What do I mean by that? Well, one of the ways that Isaiah describes Israel at this particular time, the way Isaiah describes humanity, he says, "You are a people with dull minds and faint hearts." It's harsh, but it's also a little comedic. And if you were to follow the story from verse 1, chapter 1, through chapter 8, you would find that there are these wonderful little hopeful interludes. And those hopeful interludes usually use this metaphor of hands, of God's hands in a moment, in an era of struggle, reaching out toward Israel, hoping to connect, hoping to pull Israel back out of the depths of the valley where they find themselves into a more moderated or even a place of flourishing. It's a wonderful story, chapters 1-8, even if at times it feels a little severe. And then as worshiping Christians, there's this moment in time that happens on Christmas Eve, and it happens in the very beginning of the 9th chapter. Isaiah's prophecy is delivered to us mostly in verses of poems. And the first verse of the poem that Isaiah sings to Israel is this beautiful line that welcomes worshiping Christians into the Christmas story. You heard Beverly read it even this evening when she said, "A people who are walking in darkness have seen great light." It's this hopeful turn in the story itself where Isaiah begins to encourage and lift Israel out. But we need to pay special attention to this first line because there's a very important word there that we miss in the English. We just pass over it. I just said it, great light. And the word that we just pass over is great. For us, great means like voluminous or prolific or super or awesome. The word in Hebrew, gadol, is more powerful. What we are really meant to hear is like a people walking in darkness have seen a magnificent light. A people walking, stuck in darkness, stuck in a terrible place, encounter glorious light. A people walking in darkness, stuck and lost, encounter a powerful and empowering light. It's this encouraging line that welcomes the worshiping Christian into the Christmas story some 700 years before a baby is born in a barn. And if those words do for you what they do for me when we hear them in church on Christmas Eve in a packed house, you have those words, they bring up this warm nostalgia. Memories of glorious times in church for those of us who grew up in places like this on Christmas Eve, year in and year out. It reconnects us with fond memories. When I think of Christmas, I always begin going back to my own childhood. My family spent almost every Christmas at my grandparents' house in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There in my grandparents' house, my brother and I shared a room with two twin beds. And those twin beds had mattresses that were at least 217 years old. They were the most uncomfortable beds with the most uncomfortable furniture. Everything an antique and things that little boys could not jump on or grab or run around. Every Christmas evening, when my grandmother put us to bed, she always brought me a silver flashlight. She would put this old aluminum silver flashlight on my side of the table in between my bed and my older brother Reed's bed, and then she would give me the same little lecture. She would say, "Here's the deal, Jimmy. When you wake up tonight, when you hear those reindeer up on the roof, or you hear Santa coming down the chimney, or you hear rattling going around the stockings in the Christmas tree, I want you to take this flashlight, turn it on, and shine it across the room at that clock. And when you shine the light at the clock, if the clock does not say 6 a.m., you are not allowed, one, to get out of bed, or two, to wake up an adult in the house. But if you awaken and you shine the light across the room and it says 6 o'clock or later, you come get us. Of course, those warm, nostalgic memories of my childhood as I have grown older and become a parent myself turn the page, and I remember my daughter Jade's very first Christmas pageant at our church in Los Angeles. Jade had been a rooster for Halloween, and she insisted on being a rooster in our church's Christmas pageant. And she did it with some robust reasoning of a 1 or 2 year old kid. She was like, "Dad, Mom, if it happened in a barn, there were chickens in there." For the worshiping Christian, the entrance into the Christmas story, a people in darkness have seen a great light, and all the story that flows from the gospel brings about warm and nostalgic feelings for us. And yet, if we pay attention to the details of this first Christmas story that are hidden in plain sight, it's anything but warm and nostalgic. Listen to the details of the Christmas story. Let me assure you, no postpartum mother wants to wrap her newborn in rags and place him to sleep on a pile of hay. No woman in her right mind wants to give birth in the filthiest of labor and delivery wards. No first-time father wants his family to be displaced from the safety and security of home during the third trimester of his wife's pregnancy. No matter the choir of angels and the reassurance of sheep ranchers on the scene and the gifts that come from dignitaries of the East, none of those things would calm our anxious fear enough so that we would relax. Though we remember in church the first Christmas story with nostalgia and warmth, it was a moment of great darkness for this new and holy family. Church, don't hear what I'm not saying. I am a priest, and there is no service I love more than a packed, warm, and joyful Christmas Eve service. I love what the institution and the tradition is conjuring here, right here in our midst tonight. I love it. It feeds me. It softens and opens my heart. Every Christmas Eve, give me tiny baby Jesus, meek and mild, with gentle Mary, with that beatific face that's carved into the Italian creche that's been in my family for four generations. That's what every worshiping Christian wants and deserves on Christmas Eve. And we get it tonight. But let me be clear. All other days, all 364 days of the year, give me the God that is that glorious light that reaches down and grabs me in my darkest moments, even the darkest moments of my own making. Every other day, every 364 other days, I want that God whose hands are outstretched, pulling me out of darkness when my mind is dull and my heart is faint. May it be so for you too. Merry Christmas.